Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 24. Text 13. Adosiranam naganam Bhumeo kusijat prabhu Shri lokyam gataya sarva Karmanam tigunat manam Adoshuranam Naganam Bhurmeo Koshijat Prabhu Shri Lokyam Gataya Sarvam Karmanam Trigunatmanam Adoshuranam Naganam Bhurmeo Koshijat Prabhu Shri Lokyam Gataya Sarva Karmanam Tegunatmanam Adha below Ashuranam of the demons Naganam of the celestial snakes Bhume from the earth Oka, the residence, Asrijat, created, Prabhu, Lord Brahma, Sri Lokyam, of the three worlds, Kataya, the destinations, Sarvaha, all, Karmanam, of fruitive activities, Triguna Atmanam, partaking of the three modes. Translation by the servants of Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Lord Brahma created the region below the earth for the demons and the Naga snakes. In this way, the destinations of the three worlds were arranged as the corresponding reactions for different kinds of work performed within the three modes of nature. Responsibly, Lord Brahma created the region below the earth for the demons and the Naga snakes. In this way, the destinations of the three worlds were arranged as the corresponding reactions for different kinds of work performed within the three modes of nature. So there's no purport. I'll read text 14 and read the purport to text 14. Yagasyata apaschaiva yasasya gata yomala mahajana sattva satyam bhakti yogasya marketi. Banasik yoga, great austerities and the renounced order of life, the pure destinations of Mahaloka, Janaloka, Tapoloka and Satyaloka are attained. But by devotional yoga, one achieves my transcendental abode. Purport. Srila Jiva Goswami explains that the word tapasya in this verse refers to austerities performed by brahmacharis and vanaprasthas. A brahmachari who practices celibacy perfectly in some particular stage of his life achieves Mahaloka, and one who perfectly practices lifelong celibacy achieves Janaloka. By perfect execution of Vanaprastha, one may achieve Tapoloka, and one in the renounced order of life goes to Satyaloka. These different destinations certainly depend on one's seriousness in the yoga system. In the third canto of Bhagavatam, Lord Brahma explains to the demigods, the inhabitants of Vaikuntha travel in their airplanes made of lapis lazuli, emeralds, Although crowded by their consorts who have large hips and beautiful smiling faces, they cannot be stimulated to passion by their mirth and beautiful charms. This is Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 15, Text 20. Thus, in the spiritual world, the kingdom of God, the inhabitants have absolutely no desire for personal satisfaction, since they are completely satisfied in love of Godhead. Because they only think of the Lord's pleasure, there is no possibility of cheating, anxiety, lust, disappointment, and so on, as described in Bhagavad Gita 18:62. Tam eva sharanam gachar sava bhavina bharata tam prashada param shantam sthanam patyasi sasvatam. O son of Arjuna, surrender unto him utterly. By his grace you will attain transcendental peace and the supreme and eternal abode. Om Idhyana Timuram Desai Kiram Dhyana Salakaya Chakshur Mirtanyena Tatsvai Shri Gurudhyana Baha Shri Jaitanya Manavisam Sahitam Yekam Bhutari Swayam Vipa Padama Yam Padati Shasakam Vipa Ancha Kalpa Trivishcha Prakasindhya Eva Cha Padikanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Jaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasari Gaur Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. It'll be a rather short class. I'm filling in for I don't know who. So we're continuing with the Uddhava Gita, where Krishna is explaining the philosophy of Sankhya. In these specific texts, we're hearing about a little bit of creation once again, and therefore there's so much reference to the third canto. In the past few verses, I've been explaining the different elements, how they become activated by Krishna, how the different energies or shaktis of Krishna come to life. So there's been explanation of the material modes of nature, and the three modes of material nature: goodness, passion, ignorance, the mind, the false ego. And how all of these become activated when the Lord sets his glance over material nature, so that we're able to continue with our pending material desires. And before that, there's explanation, of course, that in the different ages you had different characteristics. In such a yuga, everyone's knowledge was perfect, so they had a focus to worship the Lord. The population was self-realized. But then as the time went on, we understand that the different ages start deteriorating, and specifically in Kali Yuga, these modes of passion and ignorance are very much alive, and they're very much always competing with each other. We find most of the time that it's between the modes of passion and ignorance that everyone's lives are functioning. So here, Lord Brahma, in text 13, he's explaining how in the different planetary systems. Yesterday, Chandrasekhar Prabhu is explaining how we have the different planetary systems that are created to facilitate the living entities in their different bodies. So you have the residence for the demigods, you have residence for the human beings, different species of human beings, for the ghostly spirits, etc. And now we're hearing about the different mystics and how, which kind of planets that they attain. This is in text 14 now. Krishna is explaining that those who are practicing intense austerity, those who are in the renounced order of life, can attain higher planets like Mahaloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka, and Satchaloka. So each living entity, depending on his desire, as Krishna says, that he responds accordingly to our desire. So he elevates us to the position that we want to relate with him. Therefore, you get different planets for different living entities who perform specific activities, who have a specific karma. But, however, Krishna says, specifically, one who takes to devotional yoga, bhakti yoga, one achieves a transcendental abode, and that transcendental abode is in the Vaikuntha planets, which is way beyond planets of the great sages, the rishis, mahaloka, tapaloka, etc. And in the purport, there's this verse that's been quoted by Lord Brahma when he's speaking to the demigods, explaining how in the spiritual world their inheritance here, they have no desire for personal satisfaction because they are satisfied in love of God. So in some yoga systems, although there is performance of austerity, although there's performance of some sacrifice, intense meditation, etc., but the devotional yogi or one who's practicing devotional yoga has this specific quality that their desire is actually fixed in love of Godhead, that they don't want any kind of liberation for themselves. So that mentality, that thought pattern is completely annihilated because one's consciousness merges into only pleasing Krishna, so there's no space for anything else. And therefore, as they give the most charming example about how when the inhabitants of these Vaikuntha planets travel, they are accompanied by their very extremely beautiful wives who have beautiful features and who are always, you know, smiling and passing out nice gestures, but they don't get agitated at all because there's no modes of material nature. So they don't become overwhelmed by passion to want to enjoy, nor do they become overwhelmed by goodness, by being proud of their facilities, etc. So these are the qualities of those who reside in the Vaikuntha planets. Vaikuntha means free from anxiety. So if we have any anxiety, we find in the material world that the material world is full of fear and anxiety because we have this false claim of being the proprietors, of being the main enjoyers. So obviously we will have this fear and we will have this competition because we're seeing ourselves as the center of all the activities. And anything that might impede or come in the way of our enjoyment or our knowledge or our speculation, our concoctions, then that creates some kind of fear in us. So we strive very hard to hang on to different acquisitions, whether through our mind, through our intelligence, or through the body. Right? We become attached to protecting our family, thinking that if we lose them, we've lost part of ourselves. We become attached to belonging to a certain philosophical school of thought, or we become attached to our own concept, our own concoctions, our own subtle and gross concoctions. So this happens in a place that is filled with anxiety because we're dominated by wanting to enjoy, by wanting to be the main controllers. And we cannot be peaceful in such an environment. We cannot be happy in such an environment because we're not understanding who the actual proprietor is. Therefore, we can't be happy at all. But once we get to understand who the proprietor is, who the real maintainer, who the real controller is, then we get freed from that anxiety. We get freed from that fear of not knowing. We get free from all those conceptions, and we surrender unto that person who actually awards us this eternal happiness and that we're always looking for. So these are qualities that, especially in Bhakti Yoga, although we're on the path of perfection, we're still not perfect yet, as Srila Prabhupada would explain, but we have to strive to act on a certain platform or act in a way to want to elevate ourselves. So we know that we're supposed to be trying to please Krishna's senses. So we're trying to become servants of Krishna and his devotees. So that can happen every single day. We can serve devotees every single day. We can serve Krishna every day by serving the spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, as well. And we can worship Krishna by reading his transcendental literature, by reading scripture. We're engaging our minds and we're engaging our intelligence in learning about Krishna. This is how we worship the Supreme Lord. So our personal satisfaction comes from actually Krishna's satisfaction, because if we're a fraction of the whole, if we're a part of the whole, then we cannot exist separately from that whole. That fraction is eternally connected to that whole. So our personal satisfaction comes by attaching ourselves back to the entire fraction. Right? So if we attach ourselves back to Krishna, this is where we'll get full personal satisfaction. Not that we venture out by ourselves to try and give ourselves satisfaction. But if we actually focus on satisfying Krishna first, then scientifically proven, the scientific process of Bhakti Yoga shows that we do actually get satisfied from that. Not that we have to endeavor to satisfy Krishna and then we'll satisfy ourselves after that, personally. But no, by satisfying Krishna, we also get satisfied. So, for us, we should try and think, how do we actually change this desire of desiring to please ourselves and then desiring to please Krishna? Because we are thinking, I think it was during Keshava Prabhu's class, he was explaining why don't we surrender to Krishna? What is actually stopping us? Krishna says, you know, surrender everything at the end of Bhagavad Gita. Krishna is saying, just forget about everything. You know, just accept me and I will protect you. And throughout the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is explaining that if you just learn about me, if you just hear about my subject matters, if you just hear about my qualities, my pastimes, you know, you'll become attracted to me, and for that you'll become my friend, and I never leave my friends stranded. I'll never leave my devotees. So I'll take care of you. The minute you accept me as your friend, I will take care of you. Because Krishna, we understand, although we're not very favorable to Krishna when we're living in the material world, Krishna is still maintaining us. Krishna is still giving us a body. Krishna is still giving us sunlight. He's still giving us the different elements so that we can sustain the body, the life airs, etc. So even when we're indirectly averse to Krishna, Krishna is still maintaining us. So of course when we approach Krishna favorably, he'll maintain us even more. So how to learn to surrender to Krishna, how to break the fear of, if I give everything to Krishna, then what am I going to have left? But we actually have nothing, because we come in the world with nothing. We don't own anything in the material world. We don't even own this body, it's taken away from us. We don't own the friendships we have with our family and friends, because that's also taken away from us. We actually don't own anything in this world. And if we realize that everything is coming from Krishna, we won't attach ourselves so much. And then we won't suffer when those things, by the arrangement of Krishna and his energies, when those things are taken away, we won't feel this intense longing due to attachment. So to break this fear, we must actually start accepting and gradually come to realize by proper understanding of who Krishna is that, yes, I have nothing to fear in this world because I'm at the shelter of Lord Chaitanya and his devotees. But if we're not accepting Krishna, if we're not surrendering to Krishna, we want to still maintain ourselves because we're the controllers, or we maintain our body, etc., then we'll have a difficult situation. So of course it's very difficult because sometimes we think literally we don't walk around and say, you know, I'm the supreme controller. You know, no one walks around the temple saying, you know, I'm the controller. You know, I know what's going on with myself. But in a very subtle way, you know, we act it out. We don't want to surrender to authority. We don't want to surrender to guru. We don't want to surrender to the temple manager or the temple president or the kitchen manager. We don't want to surrender. We're thinking we know best. Right? This is our way of saying, I come first. Right? This is our way of saying, I come first and everyone else comes after. So we put ourselves at the center, and when you do that, you'll actually suffer one way or the other. And suffering doesn't mean like you'll suffer physically, you know, you'll lose a leg, or I don't know, you'll have a heart attack, or you know, you'll go blind or something. No, not suffering like that, but internally you'll start suffering in the sense that your devotional service will suffer. Because what we're cultivating here, we're trying to cultivate bhakti, but if we put so many weeds on the way, if we put envy, if we put pride on the way, of course our kripa won't flourish properly. It'll become choked. Sometimes it feels like we're not moving, we're just stuck in one point. We've been chanting, we've been doing service, but we're not feeling overly excited about serving Krishna, right? Sometimes we should ask ourselves, why am I not feeling the same way I felt when I first came to the temple? I remember when you first come to the temple, it's, you know, this exciting feeling, and even the thought of waking up at 4 o'clock was just the most exciting thing you've ever done, coming from Mangal Arati. Like, you even remember what kind of incense was burning. And you remember who was singing, and you remember in the kartal, and everything is just so exciting. And then 20 years later, it's just a bit of a hard thing to do. Or even 5 years later, or 5 months later. Because now everything is familiar. Yes, I've been to Mangal Arati every day for 3 months. I know what it's like, and it's all celestial. Yes, yes, yes. And yeah, I'm going to do something else during Mangal Arati, or I'll just sleep, or etc. Right, so we start losing that taste for serving Krishna because we start desiring other things. So this is something that we can be aware of when we performing devotional service over some time. If we're not being very attentive, we lose this enthusiasm to perform devotional service, and we just do things mechanically. And being in a mechanical relationship is not great. Right? If we've all had different relationships, and if you can try and envision, you have a relationship with someone and it's just very mechanical. Like they wake up in the morning, they say the same thing, they do it in the same manner, there's no, you know, not saying that there's no love, but that affection is not showing so much. It's just very rigid. Yeah, I'm doing this. At this time, I'm finished. I'm going to go and do this. So there's a lot of rigid, you know, practicing, or, you know, we're not extending ourselves a little bit sometimes in the relationship. We just always want everything to come to us. No one likes that kind of relationship. So if we don't like that mechanical relationship, yes, I've read Krishna book once. I know what chapter 1 is and chapter 2 is, I'm fine. Or I've I've stayed up for Janmashtami once, or I've fasted for Nirjala Ekadashi 2 years ago. I've done it, I've done my austerity. You know, we're supposed to be doing things for Krishna's pleasure, not for our pleasure. So these things can pop up, or I've been a brahmachari for 5 years, or a brahmacharini for 5 years, or I've done this rule and that regulation, I've done these austerities, etc. But if we're doing it in a mood of, you know, I'm doing it for me, so that I become staunch, so that I become like proper, then that's not really devotional service, because it's supposed to be for Krishna's pleasure. And Krishna can keep you as a brahmachari for 5 years, and then Krishna decides, I want you to become, you know, into this ashram and preach in this way. And then we have to stop with that kind of attachment and then surrender to Krishna's plan, under proper guidance, of course. So devotional service, the personal satisfaction for Krishna is very important, because that shows an element of surrender to Krishna's plan, which comes, which manifests through the Guru and the devotees. So Krishna has different plans for everyone. Krishna won't have the same plan for everyone, because we all have different levels, different anarchas that Krishna wants to uncover. So Krishna will pose certain things in a devotee's life for our own growth, for our own benefit. So when we, if we teach ourselves to always think for Krishna's pleasure, then the suffering won't be there. We won't suffer. We won't be torn between acting in this way instead of acting in that way. Indeed, we're acting for Krishna's pleasure, we'll always be happy in Krishna consciousness. Always. If we're practicing properly, Krishna consciousness is just always exciting. Because that is Krishna. You never know what Krishna is going to do. And so Krishna, you know, he throws you a ball, and then the next thing you catch another one, he's dropping five other things on your side, and then he's closing this door, he'll open up another door, and Krishna is always full of surprises. But we have to accept it, because it's for his pleasure. But Krishna makes Mother Yashoda run. You know, Mother Yashoda is trying to bind Krishna, and Krishna is running, is making Mother Yashoda run. Mother Yashoda is not saying, no, she's not complaining. She's running after Krishna, and Krishna is getting so much pleasure out of it. And she surrenders, this is my son, this is Krishna, he's naughty, I have to run after him, he's breaking pots. So Mother Yashoda, she does not petition Krishna, you have to act like this for me, because, you know, I want to sit and do stuff and I don't want you to run around. Or when the Pandavas were exiled, you know, some of us, the Pandavas had the entire government against them. Imagine having an entire government against you and your family. An entire, you know, cabinet, whatever, of Australia is against Eleanor Stretch. Right? Eleanor Stretch has been banished from Melbourne. They told her to go to, I don't know, somewhere in Byron Bay and stay there for 15 years. Right? Eek. And she's supposed to change her name, she's supposed to change her appearance. You know, imagine an entire nation is against you. You and your family, you and your mother, you know, you're without a father, you're just banished. And you try to be killed, so many injustices. But what did the Pandavas do? They thought, oh, this is Krishna's plan. Let's go along with it. And sometimes Krishna will do things just to show the magnanimous qualities of his devotee. So Krishna will make his devotee shine, just as he did with Prahlad Maharaj, right? A young boy having to go through all these difficult situations with his father Sri Hiranyakashipu. Right, so this is Krishna's plan. If we accept Krishna's plan, even amidst all of that chaos, you read what Kunti Devi says. You know, you read what the Pandavas said, they always relished those moments because they felt so much of Krishna in their lives because they had accepted Krishna's plan. But if we fight with Krishna and say, Krishna, I don't want this, Arjuna was fighting with Krishna, I don't want to surrender, what about my kinsmen, what about my, you know, religion and moral principles, you know, he was in anxiety. Because in the beginning he was saying, Krishna, I'm thinking like this, you know, you have your plans, but listen to me. And therefore Arjuna was in a dilemma, he was in anxiety, because in the first part he hadn't really accepted Krishna, he hadn't really surrendered to Krishna, therefore there was anxiety. But the minute he surrendered to Krishna, all his doubts dispelled, everything, you know, it's like everything was just cleared, this veil of ignorance was removed. And this is what happens when we try and satisfy, or when we perform devotional service for Krishna's pleasure, everything becomes clear. Even amongst difficult situations, everything becomes pleasurable. And this is something, because in bhakti, you know, you have to realize it for yourself. You know, I can go on, and we can hear so many lectures, but still our mentality won't change. But once we actually take it to heart and listen properly and hear Krishna's instructions, and then Krishna gives us a situation, we take shelter of him, and then we see how we progress. And I find personally that the best moments in my Krishna consciousness were the most difficult times, because there you feel so much, so intense, you feel Krishna and the spiritual master and the devotee so close to you, because you have nothing else. So it's kind of like compressed, you know, association of Krishna, taking shelter of the holy name, taking shelter of the instructions of Guru and the devotees, because you have nothing else. And then you go through that test, and then Krishna, you know, shows you, you've passed the test. And then you look back and you're thinking, wow, that was actually, I look back and I start thinking, that was so nice. It brought me so much closer to the devotees. I became stronger in my Krishna consciousness, and Krishna really reciprocated with me. So when we actually accept Krishna's plan, Krishna rewards us in a way that we won't even imagine. And he says so in different places in the Bhagavad Gita. And this is why here, in text 14, they're quoting the verse 1862, that by his grace, by Krishna's grace, you will attain transcendental peace and the supreme and eternal abode. So when you accept Krishna, when you go with Krishna's plan, when you please Krishna's senses, when you accept everything Krishna does and try to work with it, Krishna is saying that this is what you're going to attain. This is Krishna summarizing what he's saying in Bhagavad Gita. This is from the 18th chapter. So you'll attain Krishna's abode, you'll attain transcendental happiness and peace. So it's something that is beyond the material mind, something, a peace and happiness that is beyond the senses, that is beyond the material mind, the material senses, beyond the modes of material nature. That's what transcendental means, it's beyond matter. So when we surrender to Krishna, this is what we attain. And this is even higher than going to Janaloka, Tapaloka, or Mahaloka. We go beyond that. So this is accessible through the practice of Bhakti Yoga, as verse 14 says, by mystic yoga, great austerities and the renounced order of life, the pure destinations of Mahaloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka and Satyaloka are attained. But by devotional yoga, one achieves my transcendental abode. So by devotional service, we achieve Krishna's planets, which are not tinged by any of the modes, where we experience transcendental bliss. So this is what Lord Brahma is speaking. He's analyzing the different planetary systems, and gradually, always in analysis, we'll get to hear how Bhakti Yoga is the topmost. So I'll stop there and I'll ask you to see if there's any comments or questions.
Just made me think about Prabhupada saying this is Vrindavan because we're trying to give shelter to Krishna.
Yeah.
That's where you need to place Vrindavan.
Yes, Srila Prabhupada has brought Vrindavan to Albert Park. So in a little corner in Albert Park there's a little holy theater called Melbourne Mahaprabhu Mandir. And you can feel it as soon as you walk into this temple, and a lot of the guests that do come, they just, even some people I know that are atheistic, people who just don't even think about God consciousness, they come here and they just love it. And sometimes I think, you know, before the garden got redone, it was very dry, and after the bushfires, and, you know, it was just, it wasn't so, you know, the way they had explained, they're like, wow, you guys have this beautiful, this pond, and it's like, you know, and I'm thinking, you should see it when it's fully blossoming. You know, so they come to the temple, and for them, you know, it's like, they just get so blown away. Because it is the transcendental world. This morning I was sitting down here chanting, and then I was hearing all these birds, and then I was looking at the palm trees, and it was quiet, and I just thought of Mayapur. You know, the palms, I was thinking of Mayapur and devotees chanting, and I was thinking, wow, this is, we're living in a very special place. So Prabhupada, whatever Prabhupada said from his lotus mouth, you know, it's not over exaggeration. Prabhupada says, this is Vrindavan. So we have to connect to that mood. The mood of Vrindavan is Krishna's pleasure comes first. Thanks for reminding us.
Lord Chaitanya makes it easy to please Krishna.
Yes, Lord Chaitanya blesses us in so many ways. Chaitanya anytime. They bless us in so many ways. By performing Harinam Sankirtan, Krishna becomes so pleased. Krishna says whoever preaches this knowledge of Bhagavad Gita is very dear to him. So by us just chanting on the streets, Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, they're dancing in ecstasy. Mm-hmm. And we're doing our little bit to spread the Yuga Dharma. So Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, they appeared just for our sake. Because Lord Chaitanya chose to appear in this Kali Yuga, so that's very special. So we worship Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda every day. By doing Harinam Sankirtan, we're worshipping Gaura Nithai. So that's very pleasing to the Lord. And you see, we also become very ecstatic on Harinam. Because Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, they're always in ecstasy chanting. And the devotees, similarly, they get injected with that as well. So you see, devotees are bliss balls. Always in ecstasy chanting. Okay, I'll finish now. Thank you very much. Ranjavaj, Srimad Bhagavatam, Ki, Shri Prabhupada, Ki, Dhani Thai Guru Kamandi.